Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Couple things. Grant Williams last night for Tennessee on the road at Vanderbilt, 23 out of 23 on free throws. The best the NCAA has seen, according to this headline I see, in 60 years since someone went 24 for 24 back in 1959. You know a guy is on the roll at the free throw stripe when they set up the play in the final 5 seconds of overtime for somebody to get fouled, and they let the big man get fouled to shoot free throws. I mean, I've very rarely seen that before in college basketball at all. You don't even try and inbound the ball to a guard. You're inbounding to your big man because he's on such a roll, 23 out of 23 at the free throw line. Want to bring in Danny G here for a minute. You watched some of this Tennessee-Vanderbilt game, but want to ask you about James Harden. I know you're a Kobe guy. Everybody in L.A. on some level is a Kobe guy. Is Harden more difficult to guard right now than Kobe was at the peak of his abilities, given what surrounds James Harden right now?
Well, I think it's kind of hard to say because the NBA, when Kobe was playing, you could hand check. And there's this running joke on the internet that you may have seen. When you go to comments now on just about any sports story, underneath, like, for instance, about the referees in New Orleans, I go to the comments, and one of the first comments said, that just gave Harden two free throws. So no matter what, it's unrelated. No matter what the story is, people are saying Harden just went to the free throw line. So you can't put a hand on him, and speaking of the Lakers, when they just recently played the Rockets, Josh Hart, he put his hands behind his back. Did you see highlights of that? When he was guarding Harden, he tied his own hands behind his back.
Yes.
And he still was expecting the foul call. So, you know, the way defenses played Kobe, they were able to put hands on him. With Harden, you can't put a pinky on him without him going to the free throw line.
It's also amazing his ability to get that step back 3-point shot up. I mean, he's not a big guy, and he's not, you know, much like Steph Curry, he's not the greatest athlete in the NBA, right? I mean, it's not as if he just wows you with his explosive athleticism. He's just got such good body control, and your point on the fouls is certainly correct. I mean, he gets a lot of foul calls going to the basket, but his ability to get that step back 3-point shot up is really pretty extraordinary. I mean, you would think looking at him, and oftentimes how big the guys are that are trying to defend him, that they'd be able to get a hand on that shot. He gets it off, and he hits it at an insane rate, given that he never really has that clean of a look. I think we're going to be joined by Mark Schlereth here in a minute. Have we called him yet?
We're going to get him for you right now.
All right, we're calling Mark Schlereth. He's going to join us, and we'll start to break down everything that's going on in the world of the Super Bowl performance getting ready, as well as the NFC and the AFC championship games. But also, as I started off, we'll ask him about this DeMarcus Beasley, Cole Beasley story, which is to me so strange that you would decide to go off now of all times on the Dallas Cowboys and their play calling and argue that you weren't being targeted enough. Especially because I don't think there are that many people who think, oh, the difference between success and failure in the NFL is whether Cole Beasley gets the ball. And also, I think it makes a lot of sense that if you give up a first-round pick for Amari Cooper, that you would do whatever you need to be able to get him the ball. Did that surprise you a little bit? I want to start with that with you, Mark Schlereth. Thanks for getting up early with us this morning, joining us. Did it surprise you at all that Cole Beasley decided to tweet what he did about not being targeted enough by the Cowboys?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at Cole, and come on, I mean, he's not even is he one of the 10 best receivers from the slot in the league? I mean, he's a good player, but he is not a go-to guy. He is not a number one receiver. So why you would even get into that conversation, why you would even use Twitter that way, other than I want to leave here and I don't like it in Dallas and I don't like what's going on and I'm angry at the Bay. fire my offensive coordinator. If those things have played into it, then that is what it is. But for him to go after the organization when he's, you know, a number three, I just really don't understand it.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth. Yesterday, news comes out. I believe it was yesterday. Everything kind of runs together that the Chiefs are firing their defensive coordinator. And what's wild about this decision to fire their defensive coordinator is if D Ford lines up onside, then the Kansas City Chiefs are in the Super Bowl and he's keeping his job. How indefensible in your mind as a former offensive lineman was that error by D Ford, which when you look back on it, I know there's a lot of plays in a game, but it cost the Kansas City Chiefs a trip to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you can't have guys. I mean, obviously that's just an error of stupidity. You know, if you want to make an error of aggression and some of those other things, sometimes the incidental face mask when you're going after a quarterback, I understand that. But to line up off sides, that's just an error of stupidity. That's just not paying attention. And that's one of those that you would look at and you say, you just can't defense that, as you said. It's inexcusable. So that one's an issue, but you sitting there three third and tens against Tom Brady in overtime, and you're essentially going to play him the same way. He's got the answers to the test. I mean, if I'm going to go down, I'm going down swinging. Somebody's going to have a bloody nose, and if they get one 65 yards over the top, they get one 65 yards over the top. But at least somebody's coming away injured. You know, somebody's coming away not injured necessarily, but, you know, somebody's going to come away getting hit. And that's what baffled me about the defensive game plan. We're just going to sit back on our heels and try to do the same thing we've done for the last, you know, six, seven plays in a row, and hopefully you don't figure it out. And that's Tom Brady. He's going to figure it out.
What do you think in general about the way the NFL handles overtime? You've played in a lot of these games. Do you like the fact that Tom Brady happened to win the coin toss, goes down, scores a touchdown? I know the rules were different when you were playing. It was just basically whoever scores first. But does it strike you as not being, the best way to resolve the situation that Patrick Mahomes, whose offense posts 31 points in the second half, never gets the ball at all? Or do you like the way it exists now, this current rule?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all. I like it the way it is. I have never one time heard a coach in 12 years of playing and 18 years of covering the league come into a game and say, hey, guys, it's about one phase of football. You know, it's just about offense today. That's all we're going to focus on, just the offense. The defense, you guys can take the day off. Special teams, don't worry about it. We got your back. It's three phases of football. As I said earlier, you had the New England Patriots in third down and 10 three different times on a 75-yard drive, and you crapped in your hat. You can't get off the football field. Like, you had ample opportunity either to make them punt or to kick a field goal, and the game is extended. So, yeah, I don't need to hear about, but fantasy football would dictate that Patrick Mahomes, who's going to be the MVP, he should get on the football field. Let's stop him then. Put it to any defensive player. You want the opportunity, three third and tens in a drive, to either make them punt or make them kick a field goal? Are you guys going to say, no, we'd rather defer because we'd like our quarterback to have it. We don't want to be in that situation. We don't want to win it. You know, have you ever heard a basketball player say, you know, like, you count down, like he's in his yard going, count down, it's 5, 4, 3, 2, we're going to hit the big three. No, dish to Melo. Let him, you know, let him shoot it. No, you take that shot. You're an athlete. You're an alpha male. That's how you got there. I just don't buy that garbage of, oh, we can't. Every offense needs to touch the ball. Otherwise, life's not fair. I got news for you. Life isn't fair. It's not. So you got to make the best of the opportunities you get, and the Kansas City Chiefs couldn't do it. As I said earlier, they crapped in their hat as far as I'm concerned.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth. Always love. He doesn't pull punches. By the way, we'll talk to him next week, too. I think you'll be down in Atlanta. We'll get to bring you on in live face-to-face there. But you have been to several Super Bowls. If you had missed a Super Bowl because of the missed call by an official like we saw in New Orleans, your reaction would have been what?
Well, one, I would have been pissed that we're not going. But two, I would have been pissed that I didn't take care of our opportunities. I've always been coached, it never comes down to one play. Or don't let it come down to one play. And I look at the situation that you were in. You make the big completion again over the top, and the Rams have two timeouts, and you throw it on first down, and you throw an incompletion so they don't have to burn a timeout. You run it three straight times there. You eat up all that clock. You kick a field goal. They've got about 38 seconds left, no timeouts, to get into field goal range. So I like your odds of winning that game in that situation. So, I put a lot of that on Sean Payton, some of the plays you didn't make. And then the Rams still came down and got themselves into field goal range and to kick that field goal. So, there's a lot of different things that went on during the course of that game that cost you that game, not just that horrible call or horrible non-call, I should say.
When you were in the huddle, and you're a smart guy, like you know the game strategy. I'm sitting on my couch at home saying, I think I tweeted this, as soon as that pass is complete, definitely run the football three times is what I'm thinking. When you go into the huddle and the call is, and I don't remember whether Breeze changed the play at the line of scrimmage. I don't think he did. When the call isn't to run the football, your eyebrows go up a little bit. Do you think, hey, this is not a very smart call?
Absolutely. You execute what's called, but there's always those situations, that you look at, and you just kind of shake your head. Really, really funny. I'll give you a quick funny story. Super Bowl 32, the Broncos win the game, and we had a pivotal play in the third quarter. I think it's a 17-17 tie. We kick off to the Packers. They fumble, so we have the ball, the 35-yard line, whatever it is. And so we had put in trap. Now, we were a zone running team, but we had put in a trap just simply because we really wanted to run this trap pass. And it was going to look identical, and we're going to get them, right? So we get that sudden turnover, and we haven't run the trap yet. And we call the trap pass, and it gets intercepted. And so now it's still a 17-17 game, but instead of having that quick strike, 24-17 up, now we're just giving them the ball back after we just got a turnover, right, in a tightly contested game. So game is over. I'm on the fourth or fifth bus. I'm heading back to the hotel. Our offensive coordinator, Gary Kubiak, comes on the bus, gives me a big congratulations, man, this is great. And, we're kind of hugging it out as dudes. And then I said, hey, Gary, one quick point of order. Before you run the trap pass, you should run the trap. And he's like, up yours, Saint. I can't, and he just left. But, those are things you think about as a player. Like, why would we haven't run the trap? We haven't set them up yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you think about stuff like that as a player.
What do you think should happen? Okay, you got the blown call at the end of Saints-Broncos. Saints-Rams. Do you think there should be a review process for pass interference or any other calls such as those in NFL games?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I read all the stuff about how they do it in the Canadian Football League since 2014. They've had the opportunity to challenge. I'll be honest with you, I've never been a fan of the instant replay, the whole system in general. I hate the fact that you say, hey, we want to get the game right, but only if you have a challenge. Like, we don't care about getting it right if you don't have a challenge. So if you use your challenge already in that game, because you get one challenge on a penalty, then you wouldn't have been able to challenge that one. And so there's a lot of kind of loopholes that I've never really liked. One of the things I think that really has bothered me about instant replay in general is that it's taken the demonstrative nature of the official, the control of the game, out of the official's hands. So I think it has made them worse officials because they're taught to say, hey, swallow your whistle, let's let replay sort it out, as opposed to, really being locked into the game. So I just think it's made a group of officials worse officials. I just think it's taken away their authority. And they're taught, you know, like I said, they're taught to rely on the replay as opposed to trusting their eyes and being in charge of a football game. So I've never really cared for it. I think there's a lot of things that you would look at that are not ruled consistently. And so it's always bothered me. So I've never been a fan of it. And I think you open up Pandora's box to some degree if you're going to sit there and say, hey, let's start reviewing penalties and let's start what penalties can we review? What if there's a, you know, what if there's a holding on the opposite side? Yeah, you know, how far do we go to try to correct some of the inconsistencies in the officiating that I think you've created because you haven't given them power. You haven't given them the authority to call the game.
Appreciate it. As always, Mark Schlereth. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It's now 4 days and the NFL has still not responded to the controversy between the Saints and the Rams. Yesterday we were talking about this and I said, look, this is a relatively easy issue for Roger Goodell to solve. All he has to do is come out. I told you exactly what he needs to say. Look, we're going to look into potentially expanding instant replay review to include pass interference, maybe some roughing the passer calls. Allow coaches to challenge. The competition committee is going to discuss that. We're sorry we got that call wrong. It's amazing to me that the NFL still has not responded to that particular call. But I'm already starting to turn the page, like a lot of you, now as we come up on the end of the week and we start to get ready. We're going to be live from Atlanta all next week. And there are going to be a lot of really cool things, I think, that we have going on. But the roster of guests that we are going to have who will be on Radio Row will be live from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. I'll let you guys know if you follow me on Twitter what the situation is. If some of you are going to be down in the Super Bowl attending or you're going to be in Atlanta for that week or, as the case may be, I know we have you can tell me the latest, Danny G, but I think Atlanta is one of our two or three biggest markets in terms of podcast downloads, so I know there are a lot of people in the Atlanta area who are big Outkick fans. I'm hopeful that they're going to have an open Radio Row so you guys can come by, come in and see us. Like with last year in Minneapolis, we had a lot of listeners come by and say hi, and that's always really cool. So hopefully we're going to have that set up. Atlanta is number 3 on the podcast downloads.
Yep.
What is the top 5 or 8 markets right now?
Let's see. It's showing me the top 4 right now. Of course, Nashville, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and
Houston.
Houston, and
or
then
Dallas,
and then Indianapolis.
All right. Well, thank you for everybody out there who is downloading the podcast. But that's going to be really cool next week. And the roster of guests. I mean, I think as this show continues to elevate, the roster of guests that we're going to have next week. Danny G, you've seen the list. I mean, it's going to be pretty extraordinary.
I'll just say this because we can't announce it yet. But yesterday we got a text about one of the NFL stars who's going to be joining us on Radio Row. And when it was asked if we wanted to confirm that interview, your text back said 1,000,000,000% yes.
Yeah, so if you can think about who 1,000,000,000% yes might be, there's going to be a lot of really good radio next week. So we'll be live every day, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. We're going to have a lot of fun, and I can't wait for that opportunity to get set up. But I look at this Rams versus Patriots matchup, and I know we're going to have a lot of time to break down this game. We'll be talking about it all next week. But the more I look at it, I think one of the great under-discussed stories of the NFL postseason so far has been Todd Gurley's health. Anybody who has watched Todd Gurley play, and I watched him play every big game at Georgia, and certainly I have followed his career since he got to the NFL. It's as if people want to say, oh, well, they're just not using Todd Gurley enough, and Sean McVay certainly has put that out there as his answer, and Todd Gurley has said all the right things. I want to know what's really wrong with Todd Gurley. What is his actual injury, and is it possible that he is going to get well in the time between now and when the Super Bowl is actually played, because I think that impacts the ability of the Rams to win this game on a seismic level. Now, the vast majority of you out there listening right now believe the Patriots are going to win this game. I was talking with my guy Furman. We were talking about this on Lock It In, my television show, yesterday. Like 90% of all the money that has been wagered so far has been put on Brady, the Patriots, and Belichick. And I think that makes a lot of sense, because when it comes to wagering on the final football game of the year in the NFL, the Super Bowl, into the playoffs, if you lose the final game from a gambling perspective, or even, you know, when you're filling out one of your little squares or whatever that exists on the Super Bowl parties, you lay in bed and you stare at the ceiling if the Patriots, Belichick, and Brady win. Because you're just laying there and you're thinking to yourself, why am I so stupid? Why, after 15 to 20 years of Patriot dominance between Brady and Belichick, did I decide to bet on Jared Goff, Sean McVay, and the LA Rams? That's the natural reaction that I think most fans have if they're laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, wondering why they just lost a bet on the final game of the year, right? I think that's the way most people feel. And so if the Rams win, even like last year, if you bet on Brady and the Patriots and then the Eagles win, I don't think there were that many people who felt bad about their bet. They're like, well, how could you have ever anticipated Nick Foles and the Eagles were going to win this game against Brady? I think that's the way a lot of people feel when it comes to this Super Bowl as well. Because if you go out and you bet, and look, I think the smart bet right now, a week out, is probably to put money on the Rams. Because I think people are reacting to how well the Patriots have played. The fact that Brady's barely gotten touched by the Chargers. The fact that he barely got touched by the Chiefs. And I think that is the reason why primarily most people are coming all in on the Patriots now. They've won two games in a row. They've looked unstoppable offensively. But, you know, the more I look at it, I think the value is on the Rams. Now, am I going to have the intestinal fortitude to make that bet? I'm not sure. Because, again, you think about the post-game factor, where if the Patriots win, you feel like such an idiot. Do you guys buy into that being a substantial factor as you kind of start to pivot and look a little bit towards what might happen in the Super Bowl? That all the money is rolling in on the Patriots. They got out. They opened as an underdog. They're now like a 2.5-point favorite. It's even gotten out to 3. A big part of that is just psychological, because people don't want to get burned betting against Brady and the Patriots and Belichick again.
Yeah, I think even Patriots haters are having fatigue betting against the Patriots, because how many times now have the Patriots been to the Super Bowl where most of us in the country are like, God, anybody but the Patriots in the big game, come on. And I just want to see them lose. And it gets to the point where you hate losing your bet in the Super Bowl. So now most people are like, okay, we bet against them throughout the season. A lot of people, like Clay said, they were dead. And then they advance in the playoffs when a lot of people took the Chiefs, like most of our show did. And now,
and by the way, yeah. I know we've talked a lot about the way that the Rams and the Saints ended.
Yeah.
But Dee Ford lining up offsides is one of the most epically dumb plays in the history of the AFC and the NFC Championship.
It got buried. It got very much buried because of what happened in New Orleans with the officiating.
But think about that for a minute. If this knucklehead just lines up onside, the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl, and we're talking about, man, is this the new era of gunslingers in the NFL? Because you would have Mahomes going up against Goff, and everybody would be focused on that matchup, and one of them would be the new king of the NFL, right? I mean, I don't think that's crazy, especially if it were Mahomes after throwing 50 touchdowns, being presumptively the NFL MVP to win the Super Bowl at the age of 23. This is why coaches are so paranoid, because the Patriots, the one thing the Patriots typically do is they don't beat themselves. The Patriots are never going to have a guy line up offsides to, and I'm probably just jinxing them right now because they'll probably happen in the Super Bowl now, but I can't remember a scenario It's one thing if somebody makes a play against you or on the field, you get an interception or you have a fumble or whatever else. But the Patriots, we didn't talk about this very much, but the Patriots didn't have a single false start on the road against the Kansas City Chiefs. You want to talk about an incredibly disciplined team. The Rams had a bunch of false starts in that loud, ruckus environment in the Superdome. The Patriots went on the road in Arrowhead, biggest game it's ever been played in Kansas City in football. And that crowd was a wild, just a banshee-like dull roar that was going on throughout that entire game. And there were a lot of big, you know, short yardage plays and everything else, and the Patriots never false started. Pretty incredible. There's no way the Patriots would have lined up offsides. And so when you think about all the outcome and all the impact from that one play, think about how much different our discussion of the Patriots would be if Tom Brady had thrown that third interception, second in like the final 8 minutes of the game or whatever. We legitimately have talked about after that game whether his career was over, whether he'd ever be on this stage again. Instead, everybody has rushed to put as much money down on the Patriots as they can. I think it's psychological. I think it's kind of like a defeated syndrome where a lot of people out there just say there's no way the Patriots can lose. Yet if Dee Ford had just lined up on sides, they'd be done. And maybe the Patriot dynasty would be dead. It's unbelievable. You didn't finish your thought, but I had to jump in there because the Dee Ford thing was just driving me insane.
Well, it's pretty amazing the statistics about the Patriots' offensive line. What was it in the playoffs? Brady dropped back 90 times. He was only touched 3 times, sacked 0 times. So I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to this in the Super Bowl. Can the Rams' defensive line get to Brady? Because obviously we've talked about this. Brady gets on his back. If you can get hands on Brady, you can win the game because he gets happy feet. He gets uncomfortable. And if you can get to him, that's how you could keep the offense for the Patriots off the field. But if he's got time and you know he's got a quick release and he gets rid of the ball really fast and all of that, but if the defense can get to that backfield and get to Brady, then that gives you the advantage. But so far in the playoffs, no team has been able to do that.
Eddie, if I told you, like imagine you're Bob Sutton right now and you have gone from leading your team into the playoffs, winning 2 games in a row, and taking the Chiefs to the Super Bowl, if your knucklehead defensive end just lines up onside, to getting fired and everybody blaming you for why the Chiefs have not had the success that they wanted the Chiefs to have, would you be able to handle that swing? I mean, just because a guy couldn't line up onside?
Yeah, it's one of the things about coaching. You're at the mercy of your players. But in the end, with the coach, whether it's a head coach or a coordinator, I mean, you know, the buck stops with you. You're going to pay the price whether the player does something stupid, boneheaded like that or not. I think I heard Steve Spagnuolo apparently is the leading candidate, or they're talking to him about becoming the new defensive coordinator. But, I mean, you know, look, the Chiefs were not a good defensive team all year long. So, I mean, even he can't be surprised at what happened. Unfortunately, they didn't get the job done in the playoffs either. But you're right. I mean, look, if the Chiefs go on to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, there's no way he's out of a job. I would think it's – I can't recall a Super Bowl winning team firing a coordinator afterwards. So yeah, I mean, that's a tough way for him to go out, but like I said, the Chiefs were not a very good defensive team all year
long. Yeah, it might be something where he just decides to, if he and Andy Reid are, you know, kind of the decision that he's not the answer going forward. I mean, he's 67 years old,
right?
I think it's probably more likely that he finishes his coaching career with a Super Bowl run or a Super Bowl championship. And then he just kind of decides to ride off into the sunset, right?
Which is
an incredible way to go if you're a, you know, 67-year-old coach who, by the way, is about to turn – I'm trying to do the math here. He's about to turn 68. So, I mean, he's had a pretty incredibly long and lasting career. So that would have been a fantastic way for him to go out. Instead, Dee Ford, the postscript is going to be, oh, I think a lot of people are going to forget that play over time, yet – it's such an incredibly important play overall. And I'd love to get Dee Ford on the radio because I can't imagine how you could sleep. If I make an error like that, and it's different. I think there's a big difference between an error you make where somebody is trying to force you to make an error, right? Where the game is going full speed and you just do something that isn't a very good play versus you just make a stupid play and you don't line up on sides and it's entirely 1,000,000,000% your fault. A sin of, I think Mark Schlereth is basically hinting at this, a sin of omission as opposed to commission. And what I mean by that is, it's one thing if you jump off sides because you get drawn off sides. That's frustrating, but at least somebody's trying to draw you off sides and you initially lined up first correctly. This is something that you learn at the very youngest ages of sports in general. If you play even flag football, how to line up to ensure that you're on sides. And right there on the defensive line, looking down at the football, looking down at everybody else that's lined up across from you, it's crazy that he made that mistake. Right, Dub? I mean, if you are – this is why I don't think I could be a coach, because I think I would be driven insane by an error like that. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think, you know, you coach and you coach and you coach, and then it comes down to your guy just not even lining up correctly. And I'm sure they've talked with him a ton about this over the course of the season. Would you go insane over this, Dub?
Oh, no doubt. And it's kind of ironic because last week we had Mike Leach on, and he must have spent a good 5 minutes rambling about players not lining up correctly. Then lo and behold, a few days later,
right,
Dee Ford does exactly that to cost the Chiefs a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
That's right. That's exactly right. Mike Leach was talking about how frustrating it is and how bad it is if you can't even get lined up properly. And then Dee Ford can't get lined up properly. And you're right. The Chiefs end up losing a Super Bowl opportunity because of it.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
Animal Thunderdome time. It's cold across much of the country. I think we talked about this last year, but this is really intriguing to me. Have you seen the pictures of alligators in North Carolina that freeze themselves with their snouts above the water? Have you seen this picture?
Yeah.
Remember last year we talked about this? Well, it's happened again. And for a long time there was talk, oh, alligators, you know, they can't handle really cold weather. There are 11 alligators right now, one of which is 11 feet long, that are, this is about 200 miles east of Charlotte in a park there, that they have got a bunch of alligators. And the alligators, this is crazy, seem to sense when the water is at the freezing point, and they respond by poking their nose above the surface at just the right time. And then once they're frozen there, they enter a state of hibernation, and they don't move. And then as soon as they unfreeze, when the water starts to warm up again, there appear to be no lasting impacts. So this is pretty wild. I need to take a picture of this or to screenshot this one and just share it with people. But alligators in frozen North Carolina ponds, lakes, streams with their snouts above the water so they can continue to breathe. And they're hibernating right before the water officially freezes. It's wild. What else you got for me?
All right, sad news here. Horrified visitors watch as a man is mauled to death by a lion after climbing into its enclosure.
Let's stop here for a sec. Why does this keep happening where people just choose to climb into, like, lion enclosures?
This must have been a suicide mission because this guy, believed to be in his mid-20s, climbed over a 25-foot wall. He jumped inside the lion safari area at a zoo in Punjab, India. He was immediately attacked by a lioness named Shilpa. She dragged this guy by his neck. And then the male lion, Yuvraj, also joined in the attack, clamping his jaws around the victim's head. There is a video and audio to this. I don't know if you want to hear any of the audio. It's basically all the visitors screaming as they watch this happen. The staff rushed to try and rescue the man. They sounded car horns to scare the animals away. They got him to the hospital, but he was pronounced dead on the scene.
He climbed a 25-foot fence to get into a lion enclosure?
Man, what a way to go.
I mean, that's just such a strange decision to make in general. I feel like we've had a bunch of these, and they all seem to come from India, where guys are, like, climbing into the lion enclosures.
Really quickly, you want a happy story?
Yeah, let's have a happy story.
A miracle puppy survived euthanasia at an Oklahoma shelter and has been taken to a no-kill shelter in Iowa where he found a new home. The King's Harvest Pet Rescue no-kill shelter in Davenport said the puppy, a Labrador retriever, American pit bull mix named Rudolph, was initially taken to a very crowded Oklahoma shelter where they decided to put the canine down. The shelter said a vet administered the drugs, but Rudolph survived the injection, and the vet refused to administer a second round of drugs.
He's like the Unbreakable M. Night Shyamalan history.
I have never heard of this happening before. So Rudolph basically flipped them the paw, the middle paw, and said, keep your drugs because they didn't work.
Indestructible. We got to figure out what this dog's DNA is. Maybe superhero dog.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right. We do something called Woke Wednesday on my website, outkick.com, outkickthecoverage.com. And these are things that you guys tag me in the world of sports or sometimes beyond the world of sports, where you see an argument that somebody is making in the world of sports and think, oh my God, is this crazy? Are you insane that somebody is arguing this? Everybody saw Steph Curry against the Lakers. If you didn't see it live, you probably have seen the highlight. Steph Curry has a breakaway. It looks like he's getting ready to dunk, something that he does relatively rarely. And as he goes to dunk, he slips, falls, slides down, and then gets the ball back and attempts a three-pointer and shoots an air ball. It's gotten a lot of attention. There's been a lot of fun had with it on Twitter and social media. All right. What is fascinating about this is one, it leads to, it's always an interesting obsession, can Steph Curry dunk? The answer is yes. Can he dunk really well? No. And to tie in Steph Curry with James Harden, neither one of these guys are explosive athletes. And if you look at the way that Steph Curry can go off or the way that James Harden can go off, they're great basketball players and obviously incredibly skilled tacticians, but they're not the luminescent, otherworldly caliber athlete that like a LeBron James would be. There are things that LeBron James can do physically over the course of a game and certainly over the course of a career that maybe nobody else in the history of the game has been able to do. He is a physical freak. Harden and Steph Curry are not physical freaks. They're not guys who get to the rim and astound you with their raw, natural athleticism sometimes. And one of the things that's interesting about that is, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, the result is Steph Curry, I believe, is infinitely more influential in the way the game of basketball is being played than LeBron James is. And I say that as a guy who coaches 6-, 7-, and 8-year-old boys basketball. And my son in particular, everybody tries to make shots from way outside now. Steph Curry has expanded the concept of what a good shot is. Unfortunately, most people cannot shoot anywhere near as good as Steph Curry, and so the result is sometimes ugly basketball. And if you doubt me, we're coming up on February and March when college basketball really starts to get into a lot of tough, tight games coming down the stretch. Watch how many times you're going to see guys attempt step back off the dribble, crazy outside shots instead of going to the basket. When I was a kid and the game was tight late in the game, you would go directly to the basket, right? You would try to get to the basket and finish there, maybe get fouled, maybe through dribble penetration, create an opening for one of your teammates to make a pass for an open shot. Now we very often get one guy dribbling the basketball, a clear out, and instead of ever trying to go to the basket, he steps back and hoists, you know, a 28-foot jump shot to try to win the game, even often in games that are tied. So that in and of itself has changed the way the game is being played. But that is not what Woke Wednesday is about. SB Nation, which is a very woke website, and if you're out there being like, what does woke mean? It's like, to me, woke should be ridiculed. It's excessive, insanely far left-wing identity politics mixed with whatever is currently top of mind in the world of culture. You got to be woke In other words, you might miss something that's going on. Woke Wednesday is basically calling out the most ridiculous arguments that anybody is making in the world of sports that has no connection whatsoever in an effort to, you know, sort of advance whatever political cause you have. And so this is the headline. I don't know if everybody else on the show saw this, but I swear to God, this is the headline. Talking about Steph Curry's missed dunk. The headline of this article is Steph Curry's failed dunk experience should silence WNBA critics. I swear to God, this is what SB Nation wrote. Steph Curry's failed dunk experience should silence WNBA critics. And then the article begins, the Warriors superstar tried and failed miserably to rise up for a slam in Golden State's win over the Lakers last night, giving us an opportunity to examine the hypocrisy of basketball fans who love Curry's game but hate the WNBA. Now, first of all, Steph Curry can dunk, all right? He slipped as he was going to the basket. This is one of the most ridiculous arguments I have ever seen anybody make in the world of sports, and it's becoming all too common. So again, this is the headline. This is the headline. Steph Curry's failed dunk experience should silence WNBA critics. You know, we don't talk about the WNBA on this show for the same reason we don't talk about, like, your kid's eighth grade basketball championship, because most people don't care. If you love watching women's basketball, more power to you. I'm not that intrigued by women's basketball, so I don't talk about it. So there aren't that many WNBA critics. Most WNBA critics are like me. They only respond when we see stupid arguments like this. So here's the article. Here's a couple of lines from the article. And I'm going to continue to read. The important irony, of course, is that WNBA detractors like to claim the women's game is boring because of the infrequent dunking. Meanwhile, Curry is the literal face of the NBA, having built a prominent career and amassed tremendous wealth on a largely dunkless game. Oh, the hypocrisy. Now, this is actually an article that is up arguing that Steph Curry slipping when he was going in for a dunk means you should never criticize the NBA, and that it's incredibly hypocritical for people to like Steph Curry and not to like the WNBA. First of all, if Steph Curry played in the WNBA, he would average conservatively 120 points per game. I'm not even kidding about this. I think Steph Curry could average over 100 points per game if he played in the WNBA. And this is not hypocrisy or irony, because Curry has changed the game of basketball through his shooting in a way that never has been done before by a human being. So for everybody out there who likes Steph Curry, you like him because he's excellent on a level you have never been on before. It's much harder to do what Steph Curry has done than it is to dunk a basketball. And furthermore, Curry's lack of athleticism, there are people listening to me right now who don't think he should be the MVP because of that lack of athleticism. This is regularly discussed among a certain segment of NBA fans when people are like, oh, who do you like, LeBron or do you like Curry? Well, Curry's not an athlete. In fact, LeBron would probably say Steph Curry is not an athlete and he's more of a tactician than anything else. But the article continues. Society's ability to embrace Curry but not, say, Allie Quigley, who made more threes in last year's All-Star contest than anyone in WNBA or NBA history, reveals a striking double standard, underscoring that disdain for the WNBA was never about the lack of dunks in the first place. First of all, I have no idea who Allie Quigley is, but she's shooting with a smaller basketball. All right. So if you want to argue that women are better free throw shooters or better 3-point shooters, they are shooting with a smaller basketball at the same size hoop, which means they have a larger margin for error that's fairly substantial. If you've ever shot with a women's basketball, it's a lot easier to make a basket with a women's basketball than it is with a men's because the women's basketball is smaller. Moreover, the WNBA is crappy basketball, right? Most good high school boys teams would run WNBA championship teams. If you told me right now, any state with major population, like the state champions of Texas, would destroy the best WNBA team of all time. the state champion boys team of Texas at a high level, high division, would destroy the WNBA All-Stars. This would not be close. If you like watching women's basketball, more power to you. But this is actually an interesting question. Where would Steph Curry is one of the, 10 best players in basketball, there's no doubt, in the world. Where is the best WNBA player rank for men and women worldwide in best basketball players? 20 million? I'm not even kidding about that. I think there are probably 20 million basketball. There are 7 billion people in the world. I think there are probably 20 million people who are better at basketball than the best WNBA player. I'm not even kidding about that. I think there's that many men who are better than the best WNBA player. And I'm not trying to take a shot at women's basketball. If you want to watch women's basketball, you can watch women's basketball as much as you want. But this argument that you shouldn't be able to appreciate Steph Curry's game while also not, unless you also love women's basketball, is crazy. Steph Curry's one of the 10 best in the world at what he does. And that's probably being very lenient to put him just in the top 10. Right now, in the WNBA, I don't even know who the best WNBA player is. She wouldn't start on a good high school boys basketball team. Period. And the WNBA All-Stars, the 5 best women's basketball players in America, would get run by the best high school team in the state of Florida, or the best high school team in the state of New York, or the best high school team in Texas or California, or frankly where I live in Tennessee. They would get absolutely run by the best team in Illinois. Wouldn't even be close. The WNBA only exists because the NBA has decided we're going to uphold it. Let me bring in the crew here. Do you guys dispute anything that I just said, Danny? I mean, how crazy is this that Steph Curry slipped going in for a dunk and SB Nation writes a story called Steph Curry's Failed Dunk Experience Should Silence All WNBA Critics?
Well, first, Maya Moore is the best WNBA player.
Over-under Maya Moore as the 20 millionth best basketball player in the world
For those of you who have daughters, I don't want to poop all over WNBA or women's basketball. I know what you're saying, but some people are going to take it that way.
But the WNBA is fine if you want to watch women play basketball, right?
For sure.
If you want to watch actual, talented, really good basketball players, then you wouldn't watch women play basketball because they're nowhere near as good as men.
The premise of that SB Nation story is so completely ridiculous, because how many times has a sports fan told you, Clay, oh man, if the WNBA, if the girls could just dunk, I would watch that sport all day. It's ridiculous. And one thing has absolutely nothing to do with the other. It would be like me telling you, because of how Marcus Mariota missed the wild card playoff game, you're never allowed to talk about the Nashville Predators ever again.
Yeah, the logic of this is so incredibly failed. This is a real article. Again, we're doing Woke Wednesday. I know it's Thursday, but we're doing the Woke Wednesday from on Thursday now. Steph Curry's failed dunk experience should silence WNBA critics. The Warriors superstar tried and failed miserably to rise up for a slam in Golden State's win over the LA Lakers. And as a result, we are examining, this is the article, giving us an opportunity to examine the hypocrisy of basketball fans who love Curry's game but hate the WNBA. I'm going to open up the phone lines for Dub, 877-996-6369. I want people to be able to react. You got more, Danny, that jumps out to you about this?
No, but Roberto was just showing me a picture of the women's sport that he watches.
What sport do you watch, Roberto?
The Women's Legend Football League. You haven't seen that league, Clay?
Is that the lingerie league?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never watched that either. But, in general, where would you put the best WNBA player? Is 20 million fair or foul? Like, if you were going over or under, do you think she's better than, there are 20 million guys better than her?
No, 20 million, I don't know this.
There's 7 billion people in the world now. Hundreds of millions of people play basketball on a regular basis in this world. Ton of dudes all over the world play basketball.
Yeah, but there's some dudes that play basketball in like smaller schools and high school, and they're not that good.
Every single person who has ever played at a college level, D1, D2, or D3, is better than Maya Moore. Most guys who play on high-level high school basketball teams are better than Maya Moore in the entirety of the nation. And look, I'm not saying you can't like women's basketball. I'm saying that if you like women's basketball, and look, I watched back in the day when Pat Summitt coached, I watched a lot of UT Lady Vols basketball, right? It is nothing remotely, it's like a different sport than men's basketball.
Also watch women's beach volleyball.
Yeah, that's a good sport. I do watch that. Eddie, what do you think? Is this how crazy is this argument?
Well, Danny came in here and kind of gave me a heads up on this, and I looked at him like, what are you talking about?
Yes. This is what's great about Woke Wednesday. You guys can see these arguments that some ludicrous sports writers make, and you can send them to me, and we'll have fun with them on the show.
It didn't make any sense then, and then after reading it and hearing you talk about it, it still doesn't make any sense. This whole thing is ridiculous. So Steph Curry slips on a wet spot, and so we have
to respect
the WNBA.
To my knowledge, we've never criticized the WNBA on this show in 4 years because we haven't talked about it. Just like I haven't ever criticized like the world's ping pong championships, right? Like I haven't come on and been like, oh, you know who really sucks at ping pong? Or chess, for that matter, because there's not that much interest in it. But when I saw this, I was in disbelief. Dub, when you see this, your reaction is what?
I'm stunned. And honestly, I would watch more WNBA basketball if there was more slipping and falling. Any sport, really, because I do love
if they played on ice.
Yeah, I would watch that absolutely.
I think I'll probably. I mean, look, I have friends who gamble on the WNBA. Because there's nothing else going on at the time of season when the WNBA is going on. And they're like, I like basketball, so I'll decide to gamble on the WNBA. I'm going to open up phone lines. I just think it's important when people make insanely stupid. Like this person who wrote this article was looking for a reason to argue that the WNBA doesn't get enough respect. Like this is something that always happens, right? Like people are like, oh, the WNBA doesn't get enough respect. And by the way, do you guys agree if I set the over-under at 20 million, how many people are better than Maya Moore in the world at basketball? You going over or under 20 million?
Under.
You think there's...
She's pretty good at ball. I'm going to go under.
7 billion people, remember, in the world right now. 3.5 billion of whom are men. So if you are... Right now, there are 3.5 billion men. Somebody can do the math on what 20 million of 3.5 billion is. But basically, I'm saying like the 3 or 4 or 5% best men basketball players in the world is 20 million. That's like the best guy that you see when you go to your local gym or your local Y, the 2 or 3 best guys who play at your local court writ out across the entire world. I'm pretty comfortable with 20 million. Dub, where are you going? Over or under?
I'll go under.
See, I think people are stunned by the use of the term 20 million because they're not thinking globally as in there being 3.5 billion men. All right. Maya Moore might be right now the best women's basketball player in the world, which is great. Good for her. But remember, we had this controversy when John McEnroe came out and he was like, Serena Williams is really good at tennis, but she's nowhere near as good as men's tennis players. And I talked to a bunch of pro men's tennis players, and they're like, dude, everybody who's on college scholarship as a male tennis player at a high-level college would run Serena Williams if they played a tennis match. And there was a big article about how Serena Williams practices against men because it makes her game better because the men are so much better than the women. That makes sense, right? I love this. I'm going to open up phone lines, 877-996-6369. Steph Curry's failed dunk experience should silence WNBA critics. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you heard that argument and you thought to yourself, you know what? This writer is right. It's hypocritical. It is ironic. Clay Travis, you are sexist. All of these things are true because Steph Curry slipped on his way to a dunk and the WNBA should never be criticized. Maybe you agree with the writer.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We will go to your calls. They're loaded. Should have some fun with that in a moment. But first, Eddie Garcia, what you got for me?
Got a Geico scoreboard for you. We'll start in the NBA, where James Harden went for a career-high 61 points in the Rockets' 114-110 win over the Knicks. 21st straight game with 30 or more points for Harden, and he tied Kobe Bryant's record for the most points by a visiting player at Madison Square Garden. Pacers beat the Raptors 110-106, but in the win, Indiana lost star Victor Oladipo to a serious knee injury. He'll have an MRI later today, but they think he's going to be done for the year. 76ers outscore the Spurs down the stretch 10-0 to close out the game in a 122-120 win for Philadelphia over San Antonio. Joel Embiid, 33 points and 19 rebounds. Ben Simmons, a triple-double for the Sixers. College basketball, top-ranked Tennessee, the new number one in the country, gets a scare at Vanderbilt, but the Vols get an 88-83 overtime victory. They're led by Grant Williams, who had a career-high 43 points. He was 23 for 23 from behind the three-point line. Tennis, the Australian Open overnight. Rafael Nadal advanced to the men's final with a straight-sets victory over Stefano Tsitsipas, 6-2, 6-4, and 6-love. The NHL All-Star Game is this Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's our Discover Card key matchup. Get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. It includes your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds, but first, a word from Farmers.
From a dog accidentally flooding a living room to a dog taking a joyride, we've covered it. Talk to Farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, Exchanges, and Affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
All right, we got loaded lines. Let's go ahead and roll in. And I'm going to ask you to be quick because I can get through as many calls as I can. If I cut you off, it's just because I don't think you're saying anything interesting. No harm, no foul. Edgar in North Carolina. What's up, Edgar?
Clay, I love your show, but I respectfully disagree about 20 million basketball players being better than Maya Moore.
How many you think it is?
How close I think it is?
No, how many do you think it is?
Oh, she's in the – oh. Maybe 1,000.
You're
maybe
insane.
1,000.
You are insane.
Nope.
Have Absolutely
you seen,
insane.
Have you seen,
yes.
No, I'm not. Have you seen Maya Moore play?
Yeah, there are 1,000 D1 men's basketball players. Every single one of them is infinitely better than Maya Moore. I don't think she could get a scholarship to play men's basketball.
Then you obviously haven't seen her. And to take your argument about the NBA, WNBA All-Star team losing to the state champions from Florida or Texas.
They get crushed.
That's an absurd statement. If you put that in a Vegas line, if people were betting, they would definitely go with the WNBA team and they would get paid because their starting lineup would be. All you had to do is look at most of those guys can't shoot. All of them can't shoot. Even Zion Williamson, the number one player in the country right now, people talk about, is his jump shot that good?
You think that one of those girls is going to keep Zion Williamson out of the paint? It would be a massacre. Thanks for the call, Edgar. I would love to see that matchup. State of Texas boys team against the best WNBA players. Remember, this is a different sport, but 15-year-old boys in Dallas, Texas on a travel soccer team beat the U.S. women's national team in soccer. The best women's soccer players in the world got beat by 15-year-old boys from Dallas, Texas in a match. It's just, they're good women's basketball players. You can enjoy watching it, everything else. They would get run by men. Mark in Phoenix, what's up?
What's up, Clay? Love the show, bro. Hey, real quick, first of all, Zion Williamson would have like 400 dunks.
There's no, yeah, the idea that anybody in the WNBA would stop Zion Williamson when people can't do it in high-level men's college basketball is insane to me. I mean, I think he could dunk the ball on almost every possession.
I think your number at 20 million is probably pretty close. I think there could be a couple girls. I'm going to give you a quick story. I played a girl named Diana Taurasi, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Yeah.
She's legit, and she plays basketball like a dude. Like, she was talking smack. I swear she didn't miss, you know, posting dudes up. And she's not small. She's like 6'2", 6'3", and pretty built. But, again, I think it's so one-off where her or maybe Maya or some of these others could hold their own in a men's game, not the NBA, but maybe in a big high school game or even a low-level college game. But some of these girls are pretty legit, but I think your number's pretty spot on.
I'll give you an example. You, the Lady Vols at Tennessee would scrimmage against guys who play intramural basketball, just like average, you know, pickup basketball player, dude, college age. That's who they would scrimmage against at Tennessee. You could be a women's basketball practice player. And if they put the pressure on the women, they couldn't get the ball up the court. And that's the best women's basketball team in the country at the time, UConn and the Lady Vols. And the men would destroy them as pickup intramural level men's basketball players. And that's the best women's college team in the country at the time, them and UConn. Adam in Indiana, what's up?
Hey, love the show. I would take the over on $20 million, and it wouldn't even be close. Think about this. You mentioned the U.S. Think about the top and the bottom tiers in Europe and Asia and South
America.
Yeah, that's
my argument. Basketball is a global game. There are 3.5 billion men who play. If you take just the 20 million best of those 3.5 billion, I mean, not everybody plays basketball, right? So you're talking about a billion people probably who play basketball across the globe. I mean, we're talking about like the top 2% of those players. I don't feel bad at all about that percentage. I mean, that's just basic math. That's how I got to 20 million. I said, okay, there's probably a billion guys who play basketball at some point in time around the, you know, around the world. If you take the top 2% of those guys, that's 20 million, right? I think the top 2% of men are better at basketball than the best woman. I don't think that's a crazy perspective. Aza in Virginia, what's up?
Yeah, this is Ace. Hey, I wanted to make a point about the writer. I believe that you're overlooking the fact that he probably went to the Jemele Hill School of Journalism, and not only that, he's on the Gillette Board of Directors. And I think myself, I raised the WNBA ratings on my own. I watched the game all the way to halftime before I realized it wasn't an NBA game. They all look like men. I'm thinking that maybe there might be a couple of women that are better than Maya Moore, but I'm only thinking one power forward, and that's probably Michelle Obama, but that's a man too, so what do you do?
Good Lord. It's a good thing Ace doesn't have his own show because he'd been fired about 8 different comments there. Let's go to Aaron in Louisville. What's up, Aaron?
Clay, love the show, man. Hey, I think it's going to be over for sure. Probably pushing $100 million. And I say that not to sound sexist, but, you know, with tennis or golf, you know, there's plenty of girls that could drag around a bunch of Sunday hacks or guys that play at their local tennis club. But athleticism plays out in this. And you kind of took it when you talked about the Lady Vols. But I had buddies that went to University of Kentucky that practiced with the girls. And they, a couple of them were actually asked to stop dunking because it intimidated them after they stole the ball during full court press situations.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think anybody who's ever scrimmaged or watched one of those scrimmages with guys who are practice players is blown away by how much difference there is when they actually get on the court with him. Dan in California. What's up, Dan? Dan did not respond. Yeah, you there? All right. Josh in Arizona. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I think this isn't even a debate. It's $20 million and way over. I played at a mid-major college, and our 12th guy on the bench would score 40 in the WNBA. Not only would every high-level high school player, NAIA player, D1, 2, and 3 player be better than them, but the factories in Europe and China are just churning out players. Quick story, our high school basketball team scrimmaged a team down here in Tucson at a major college, and we mopped the floor with them. It's $20 million way over.
Walter in Ohio. What's up, Walter?
I completely agree. I definitely think it's over 20 million. Just because I think even me in my mid-30s, I think if I can get a couple months in shape, I'd be able to compete in the WNBA. And right now, I know I couldn't even play a couple minutes in the NBA.
I would love, by the way, thanks for the call. I would love to watch the WNBA if they had one team of fat, out-of-shape dudes in the WNBA. I would actually love to see how they would do. Like an average rec league team of guys who play pretty regularly and just put them out on the court and let them play for a season. I think it would be incredible.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.